May 2007, off a lonely back road outside Jennings, Louisiana, police find the naked dead body of a young woman. It's the fourth murder here in 2 years. And by 2009, four more women will be killed.
Still no answers, just mounting frustration among some in the community.
Suspicion and fear are destroying this southern town.
It's always in the back of your mind. Are they going to find a body today?
Can a fresh take on the mystery lay the people's fears to rest? I'm M. William Phelps, best-selling crime author, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
Nobody can hear her scream.
Because he is one. Jefferson Davis Parish, Louisiana. In the small town of Jennings, a serial killer is on the loose, targeting girls mixed up in the local drug scene. A multi-agency task force says it's clocked over 50,000 hours on these murders, followed thousands of leads, even staked an $85,000 reward. But so far, whoever killed those eight girls is still out there. And the community wants to know why.
As months turned into years and the number of victims grew, citizens have raised questions about both the integrity and competence of local law enforcement.
There are even rumors of a cover-up. Police aren't commenting, so to get at the truth, I'll have to choose my sources wisely. Someone I can always rely on is veteran criminal profiler John Kelly. He knows this case, and he thinks eight victims could be just the beginning.
Yeah, this guy's not done. I don't know where he's at, but this guy's not done until they catch him.
The first thing that jumps out at me is, in such a small community, how is this guy flying under the radar? He must be local, so he doesn't arouse suspicion. Or an experienced predator who no one sees coming. I need to get another predator's take on this. So I've asked Kelly to call his insider. A convicted serial killer, he is codenamed 13. For 10 years, Kelly's been sharing his cold case files with 13 to get a killer's perspective on unsolved murders. Can he tell us how the Jefferson Davis killer hunts?
We've got eight girls murdered here over 4 years. They're all part of the local drug scene. Did this guy stalk his victims?
There's a very good chance. He knows their lifestyle. He knows when they go to work, when they come home, the patterns.
Do you think he kills in the day or at night? Or both?
Both.
Both, okay.
Both. He may have even staked out. And if these girls work night shift, could have been one of the times he grabbed his victims. That's it.
13 thinks this guy's a predator, all right. But maybe he parties with these girls, too, and nobody suspects him. He could be black or white, and I'd say he knows the way of the street. To get onto his trail, I need to head down there and pound some pavement. It's almost stranger in a strange land here. Nothing but fields, flat as a tabletop. Whole horizon above me here. Who knows what I'm gonna find, really? I mean, I'm down here with the gators, the oil, the gas, the heat, the Yankee from up north, heading down into the deep south. You know, this is Cajun country. This is where people stick together, where they don't like to let their secrets fly. And here comes this northerner coming into town, asking them to talk about their secrets. Jennings, Louisiana, the parish seat of Jefferson Davis. About 11,000 people live in this quiet, rural town, a few notches down the Bible Belt from Lafayette. But like just about everywhere these days, times are tough. Nearly a third of the town lives below the poverty line. And now, they've got more to worry about than just putting food on the table. These girls were mothers. They were daughters. They were cousins. They were human beings. I'm going to be on my knees a lot down here, praying for these girls, that's for sure. I'm a Catholic, and that part of me drives me, keeps light shining in. And with all this darkness, all this evil, I need the light to shine in. So do these girls. My starting point in Jennings is a guy who's had a lot to say about this case. What I want to know is, how much of it is true? Private investigator Kirk Menard thinks the local cops aren't doing their job, so he's had to do it for them.
Talk to me about these girls.
They walked streets, visiting a lot of people up and down one certain area, which we call their high-risk area. South side of town. Yeah, they were party girls, you know. They were into drugs. They were into this certain lifestyle, and that's what they knew.
Girls like Loretta Chason Lewis, a 28-year-old mother of two, and the first to go missing.
A fisherman made the first gruesome discovery May 20th, 2005, in a canal off Highway 1126.
Loretta had been missing for 3 days. Her body was too decomposed to determine cause of death. But toxicology reports revealed a high level of drugs in her system.
Were all these women abducted from basically the same area?
Correct. They've all frequented the same places, the same house, the same location, and they all knew each other.
After 7 victims had been killed, Menard began staking out the areas the girls were known to frequent. He filmed this videotape of the girl who would become the 8th victim, Nicole Guillory.
I got a tip from a source that all the victims had gone to this particular house. I was watching the house, wanted to see who came, who went, what was going on, see if I seen any type of pattern of activity. And as it turned out, Nicole Guillory walked out of the house and began walking up and down the street.
Nicole Guillory, 26, was the last girl to go missing in August 2009. An autopsy revealed she died of asphyxiation. Menard believes this party house in the slum area of Jennings is the key location that connects all the victims. Now, he's taking me to see it.
Main Street, downtown Jennings looks pretty quintessential Deep South to me. It looks beautiful.
Well, you're about ready to see. It's a big difference.
Where are we going?
We're going to the south side of the tracks, where most of the action takes place.
Is that one of the reasons why you carry this?
Can't never be too safe. I hope I have Jesus on my side in that, so.
Well, let's do it then.
We are now over the south side of the tracks.
In Jennings, Menard says south of the train line is known as the Badlands. Drugs and poverty have these streets in a deadly grip.
So this is where everything went down.
This is where everything went down. Brittany Gary ended up disappearing from this store right here.
17-year-old Brittany Gary was the seventh girl to go missing in Jennings in November 2008. Last seen in this convenience store. Next seen lying in the long grass out on Keystone Road, 3 miles from where the first victim was found. She'd been asphyxiated, and a cocktail of drugs was found in her system.
What do you feel like when we're driving down this road, the last place Brittany Gary walked?
I think that somebody down here knows something. I feel somebody knows something, but they're scared to talk. I don't know if they're scared of law enforcement or the actual killer or killers, but they're scared of something.
So people are tight-lipped around here.
Yes, very much. This is south side of the tracks.
So you can get anything you want down here, huh?
Pretty much, yes.
Cocaine?
Anything. Ecstasy. It all happens here. This is actually the street where I caught Nicole Guillory on. And there's the brown house where she sat on the steps at, coming up to the left.
So that's the party house right there.
That's the party house. We have a source that puts every last victim right there.
One consistent line in all these murders is that the victims were high. They had drugs and alcohol in their systems.
I'm not telling you, that's not true.
All these girls were connected. They all knew each other. The whites and the blacks of these girls, they knew each other.
If they all knew each other, did the killer know them too? Or at least know their weakness?
Their need for the drug overrides their fear. That's what I believe happened in this case, is they were lured with drugs by someone they trusted.
There are 8 families grieving in this town. Some of them hired Kirk Menard because, he claims, they were tired of waiting for police to act. He wants me to meet one of his clients, Mike Dubois, brother of victim number 4, Whitney Dubois. Mike has firsthand experience of life in the Badlands.
Mike has been on the streets, he's lived there, he's been around all these people.
Mike's done a lot of drugs, huh?
Mike's done a lot of drugs, and that's something that he has not denied.
But do I trust a guy who's done a lot of drugs? Do you think so?
It's those type of people that can open doors for you, especially in this type of case.
Well, let's see what he has to say.
Let's do it.
For a small town private investigator, Menard has a lot of information. And I'm starting to wonder, is this case as cold as it seems? Do you think you know who did this?
Yes.
Jennings, Louisiana has lost 8 young women in just 4 years, and the killer's still out there.
With 8 women now dead in Jeff Davis Parish, and the person or persons responsible still at large, it seems surprising to see many women out alone.
Private investigator Kirk Menard says all the victims were connected by a party house on the south side of the tracks.
He, you know, explained to me the north side, south side of the tracks. We sat down, we went through some of the victims. how they were found. He tells me about this party house right here that all the girls were in at one time.
If he's right, that means the killer is probably part of the scene. A drug user, too. Someone the girls knew. Right now, I'm meeting with a guy who was in the drug scene for most of his life. Mike Dubois, whose sister Whitney was victim number 4.
So here we are in the spot, Mike. Tell me why we're here.
This is where my sister was found a few years ago. Murdered, left here, naked, right about the spot we stand in.
Tell me about Whitney, the type of person she was, her dreams, her goals.
Whitney loved music, loved people. She was a people person. Whitney was a great people person. She had goals till the drugs took her. And when the drugs took her, she had no more goals.
As a former drug user himself, Mike knows the dangers of the lifestyle.
We tried many times to get her off the street. We tried and we tried, and she always said, "Brother, I can take care of myself. I can take care of myself." And I kept trying to tell her, "Baby, if somebody intends harm for you, you know what's going on. There's nothing you can do."
What's so funny, bitch?
Nothing. What's up?
Hey, man.
Get out.
According to Mike, Whitney was last seen at the party house on the south side of town. And like Kirk Menard, he believes that house links all the victims.
They're all right here in the same area. They all knew each other. They all ran the same circles. They all had the same drug problem. Everything is just too connected for it not to be connected.
What would you do to your sister's killer if you could?
I don't think you want to know.
I do want to know.
Killing him would be too good. Torturing him would be too good. Locking him up like an animal for the rest of his life would be what he deserves.
Mike, do you know who did this?
Yes.
How do you know?
From information that Kurt and I have gathered, from what I know, tells me who it is.
Mike Dubois and Kirk Menard suspect a local white male connected to the party house who cannot be identified for legal reasons. He knew all the victims and has admitted taking drugs with them at the party house. In May 2007, he was arrested for the murder of victim number 3, Kristen Lopez. But he walked free when the key witness against him suddenly recanted her evidence. Police say he hasn't been ruled out, but Mike's opinion is they bungled the case.
I believe that they have made so many mistakes in chain of evidence, in simple investigative work, that I think it's going to be hard for them to get a conviction. A lot of people wouldn't talk to law enforcement because they don't trust them. They've had a long past history with the people in law enforcement here of corruption, dirty tactics, you know, trickery. Nobody would trust law enforcement.
These are serious allegations, but Mike goes even further. His theory is police don't want the truth about these crimes to come out because it will expose their own involvement in the dark world south of the tracks.
You have law enforcement officers that were involved in drugs. You have law enforcement officers that were involved in what they call tricking these girls, which is sleeping with them. You know, you have law enforcement officers providing favors for them. You also have law enforcement officers that were providing these girls, I believe, to some very high up politicians.
But why? Why kill these girls?
They either knew too much, saw something they weren't supposed to, involved with people they shouldn't have been. I've had lots of theories over it.
But when you say they knew too much, what the hell does that mean?
They knew something way too much about either law enforcement or the drug trafficking around this town, or both, that I think will connect it together.
I don't know. I'm not buying Mike's conspiracy theory. Murder and cover-up? Not likely. To keep that a secret, the entire task force would have to be in on it. 5-6 agencies are not covering up 8 murders by a serial killer. It's impossible, people. Impossible. I need to get away from hearsay and start doing my own investigations. So I'm heading to the site where one of the victims was dumped to see if it gives me any clues. In May 2008, victim number 5, 23-year-old Laconia Muggy Brown, was found here next to a police shooting range. Jennings police officer found her. Throat cut, doused in bleach. Her body was still warm.
The old police shooting range is right there. Muggy Brown, her throat slit from ear to ear, and allegedly with bleach all over her, found right there.
I've come here to get away from rumors and refocus. But now, I'm starting to ask questions, too.
Muggy Brown allegedly had bleach all over her. Now, what does that mean? What does it tell me?
Well, it tells me that if a cop did this, he would know to cover up any forensic evidence with bleach, because bleach is going to wash away all his problems. And I think I need to look more into this. I mean, you have a police shooting range. You have a cop who finds her. You have bleach on her. I need to talk to a cop about this. And I think Frank Adamson is my guy.
Frank Adamson is a former colleague of my profiling contact, John Kelly. Together, they helped crack America's biggest serial killer case, the Green River Killer in Washington State. In his long and distinguished career, Adamson has seen most everything. So what's his take on this case?
Jefferson Davis Parish in Louisiana. You're familiar with the case.
Yes.
And one of the bodies we're looking at right now is Muggy Brown, 23 years old. Man, a cop finds her, her body's still warm. She was just murdered. I mean, you look at this thing with the bleach, the boldness of dumping the body right in a police department front yard. Are we talking about a cop here?
I don't think it has to be a cop. What we're really talking about here is the kind of person who has local ties, that this is his comfort zone. He feels free to kill and to do it with almost abandon. He's leaving the body on a firing range, a police firing range. He knows that body's going to be found rather quickly. And I would say that he's mocking the cops. It's possible that he's got some vendetta against cops. The second thing is he's picking up very vulnerable people, a prostitute, be it anybody else that's vulnerable.
He slices their throats, pours bleach on them, and dumps them in front of a police department. That shows a lot of nerve, Frank.
I think it also shows a lot of anger, at women in general. All they have to do is something that he doesn't like, and they're marked for death. It's easy to gain control over them. And these are factors that these killers use to their advantage.
Adamson has just thrown cold water on police involvement in these murders and given me new leads to chase. This killer may have a history of run-ins with the law, which makes him resent police. And he may pose as a dealer or a John to gain access to easy targets.
So this guy of ours supposedly hangs out with prostitutes, but here's what bothers me about this. These girls, I don't consider them prostitutes, all right? You go down to Louisiana, to Jennings, and they're called street girls. These girls, a lot of these girls remind me of my sister-in-law, the lifestyle they led. They're not prostitutes. And I hate when people tag these types of girls with that moniker.
Yeah, I certainly understand that. However, you and I both know that these girls will get involved in sexual experiences for drugs.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't make them a prostitute. That's what I'm saying. You know, people burglarize homes to get drugs. It doesn't make them a career burglar. You know what I'm saying? So they're doing things to support a habit. I'll agree with that, just like my sister-in-law did. But the label of prostitute bothers me, because a prostitute is someone who does that for a living. All right? They walk the street for a living. It's a different thing.
It's a sensitive topic for me. I know how hard it is for the families of these girls, living with that stain on their loved one's memory. And I know how easy it is for the public to care less about some dead prostitute than a murdered human being. Besides, it's not the girls who have the real problem here. It's the killer. Like Adamson said, the slightest thing can set him off. Kelly has a psychological take on it.
You see, Matthew, what gets these guys off is the resistance. Resistance equals what? Rejection.
Right.
So they take resistance as rejection. Rejection equals what? Abandonment. And if you think about it, if you look at any serial killer that we've researched or worked, they, or the vast majority of them, have been abandoned by either their mother or their father. And they have faced extreme criticism growing up, which is another form of rejection.
And really, for this guy, it doesn't matter what they are. If they are prostitutes or not prostitutes, to him, whatever they are, is his object of desire.
Absolutely, they are simply objects for him to gratify his sexual needs.
And once they reject him, boom, he snaps.
Would another killer agree with Kelly's view? I want to bring in a different kind of expert on this. The dark mind of 13.
Do you think he got a sexual high from his killings?
Jennings, Louisiana, looks like any other quiet southern town until you see the billboards. A killer's on a rampage down here. He's got to be stopped. Local private detective Kirk Menard and his client, Mike Dubois, believe a man connected to this party house is the killer. They say police let him slip through their fingers. Dubois even alleges a cover-up. But is the rumor mill only making it harder to solve this mystery?
You see, the whole thing with these guys down there is they want to blame law enforcement, right? And the reason they want to blame law enforcement is because law enforcement's an easy target. And the community there, they need someone to blame because these cases aren't being solved.
Profiler John Kelly has worked hundreds of murder cases, and he knows sometimes they take years to crack, especially when citizens turn against law enforcement.
They don't trust law enforcement is what you're telling me.
That's big.
That's major.
If you don't trust law enforcement, how can you help law enforcement? Law enforcement needs the community to solve this case, and they're not getting that right now.
I'm trying to sort through the gossip and help find this killer before he kills again. So, once again, I've asked Kelly to call on his secret consultant, the dark mind of an incarcerated serial killer he calls 13. My sister-in-law was a lot like the victims in this case, hooked on drugs, living the high-risk lifestyle. And like these girls, she was murdered. So it's hard for me to keep from getting emotional. That's why I come to 13. 13 doesn't get emotional.
How are you?
Okay, John.
Good. Do you think he hangs out with prostitutes a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think he kills every prostitute he goes out with?
No, not everyone.
Why do you think that is?
He may not feel angry enough for the women could do exactly what he wanted, where there was drugs involved, and he felt good.
None of the victims in these murders had a record for prostitution. But 13 believes, in the dark world of the party house, drug addiction may have driven them to desperate acts.
Didn't I tell you to shut your damn mouth, huh? You want some more of this? You ain't worth half of that.
I've seen girls out there that keep from becoming a prostitute. They would go to these large department stores and steal clothing. And they'd have somebody that they could send these clothing to. After a couple of times getting caught for shoplifting, they turn to prostitution. It's just, only takes one or two times. They get the hang of it. That's it.
If 13's right, this killer is in the middle of the perfect environment for a predator. Drugs, prostitution, and a police force that can't get results. It's a disturbing picture of this small community. But is it the truth? To get answers, I'm meeting with an official source. Former mayor of Jennings for 14 years, Greg Marcantel. So Greg, tell me what type of community Jennings is.
It's a very giving community. It's a very caring community. They'll have fundraisers. They'll have dances. They'll have bake sales to raise money for people that have been injured, people that have lost things in a tornado or a hurricane or some type of calamity. It's the type of community, I think, that cares about, the people care about each other.
And I guess like any community, there's poverty, there's crime, etc. Well, I've heard about this north and south side of the train tracks.
There traditionally has been a divide in our society between the rich and the poor, black and white. I don't think that the divide, as it were, is nearly as dramatic as it used to be, and not as dramatic as some people would like to present it as.
I get the feeling Greg means people like private investigator Kirk Menard, who says the South Side's a lawless place that cops can't deal with, or just don't want to. The investigators working on this serial killer case, are they working as hard as they did from the start?
These people are doing everything they possibly can to try to solve these murders. I don't believe for a moment that they haven't been solved because somebody's covering something up, because the people involved are inept. I know just the opposite. I know that the people who are involved are extremely competent. If it were easy to solve it, it would have been solved. because the people who are trying to solve these problems, they're the ones spending the sleepless nights. They're the ones working 16-hour days. They're the ones following hundreds and hundreds of leads trying to get to the bottom of this. They're not hiding something so they can prolong this horrible situation. They don't get paid by the hour. They don't get paid by how many leads they dream up. They're sincerely trying to solve this problem. And it's just an extremely difficult situation.
The former mayor has a point. Undermining the local cops isn't helping make this community safe from a killer. I understand why victims' families reach out to private investigators when police progress is slow. Families sometimes look to me for the same reasons, so I get that. But I'm always careful not to get in the way of the official investigation.
When you get a private investigator involved in an open serial killer case, what happens? The cops lose all sense of trust where they need it the most, which is inside this small community. That's where the answers are here.
I need to confront Kirk Menard about his role in this case and to find out, is he hiding something?
If you develop evidence in a serial killer case and it's found that you hadn't turned it over, that's obstruction of justice.
Jennings, Louisiana has a murder rate that's got locals jumping at their shadows. 8 girls dead in 4 years, and the killer is roaming free. The community's desperate for answers.
While information is hard to come by, many believe the answers are on the streets in the circles these girls travel by day and by night.
Some victims' families have been so frustrated, they've hired PI Kirk Menard, thinking he might do what police haven't yet. Find the killer. But I'm thinking that reinforcing the divide between local cops and the community isn't helping.
I still have my clients to represent, you know, and it's not unusual to hire a private investigator when they're leery of law enforcement. They've hired me to give them another avenue, sources to come through and go ahead and submit my information to law enforcement.
But if this case could be solved with you withdrawn from it, would you do that?
Of course I could.
Would you withdraw from the case?
If my clients asked me to withdraw.
What if the police asked you?
If they asked me to withdraw, then yes, I would.
You would?
Yes, I would.
Totally withdraw from the case?
Yes, I would.
Because I think that's what needs to be done. You know why I say that? Not because I got anything against you. I don't even know you personally.
Right.
But I know that your work in there, what's happening is they're going to you now. The people on the street.
Right.
They're not going to the cops anymore. That's wrong. If they're going to you, and Mike is bad-mouthing the cops, and he's with you, that's a major problem.
And I have actually asked them to call the police when I get calls in, and they say they won't call police. They say, you know, if you don't take it, I'm not giving it to nobody.
Yeah, that's a bad position. That's a very bad position.
Yes, and it puts me in a catch-22. You know, they want to give me, do I just let them hold that information inside, or do they give it to me? You know, what?
See, I would step away. If it was me, I would step away because if I'm hindering an investigation, I would be concerned about being brought up on charges of obstruction of justice.
From years as a victim's advocate, I sympathize with Kirk's situation. But this is a murder investigation. He needs to get some perspective. And maybe I do too. So one last time, I'm going back to my profiling contact, John Kelly.
I feel like I'm on a freaking wild goose chase. I got a private detective sending me in one direction, a source that he gives me sending me in another direction, and I don't know what the hell's going on anymore, Kelly.
Well, I think you need to relax, take a step back, analyze the situation.
Let's have a chat with our man in the box.
Kelly's right. To catch a killer, I need the insight of a killer. Has 13 got anything more to say?
Hey, John.
Who is this guy?
You know what? I looked over this pretty close. They all ran in a little circle-like.
Okay.
They all hung out together. Brittany was a cousin of one, best friend of the other. Let's see, what else do we have here? And I think that there might have been a couple of guys that hung in that circle. And I would look very closely at them. He's a friend of the family.
13 has hit on a long chain of connections between the victims, which could lead to the killer. But is he just a friend of the family, or a family member? I've got another person to confront. He's local, right?
Yeah.
Knew the victims. He knew a lot of those girls. Sometimes a killer becomes so confident, they put themselves at the center of the investigation. He's a known, admitted substance abuser. He's been arrested for it. He'll talk to media and police, enjoying the secret thrill that no one suspects him.
Was there a cover-up or not? We don't know.
I'm wondering, has the killer been right under my nose all along? Mike, did you kill any of these 8 women? There are 40 churches in Jennings, Louisiana. 40 churches in a town of just 11,000. The signs on the front lawns say it all. After losing 8 girls to murder, this community needs all the help it can get to put itself back together. But what if the killer was one of their own? Someone closer than anyone had imagined. Mike Dubois is the brother of victim number 4, Whitney Dubois. He told me local cops could be involved in these crimes, but was that just a decoy? What if I told you some people think you're a person of interest in this case? What would you say? Have you heard that?
Yes. Yes, I've heard that. It doesn't surprise me. You know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I was in the world. I mean, and I was around, so. But if I'm a person of interest, that's fine. I let everybody's a person of interest. I think that's only natural that somebody close in the family or anybody around would be a person of interest.
You're in jail for a certain amount of time, then the murders stop. You get out of jail, people go missing.
But okay, let's take me. I was incarcerated for a while and then came out and supposedly they stopped. But how about every other criminal from this town, every other person from this town that was incarcerated and got out at the same time or had left and come at the same time? You have that same amount, you know, just as many people as that, so.
Mike, did you kill any of these 8 women?
No, I did not. You know, I can prove where I was at, you know, on everything. You know, let's move on to real suspects. I mean, don't rule me out. I don't want you to do that. I keep that investigation open, but let's move on to real suspects and quit worrying about, you know, those that are trying to do something that may or help or not.
Mike Dubois seems pretty straight up to me. He's no killer. And now I'm wondering, with all this conspiracy theory talk, did I get caught up in the rumor mill myself? To get grounded, I'm going to meet with a woman who's been the voice of reason in the community, Sonia Beard, Mike Dubois and victim number 4, Whitney Dubois' cousin.
Whitney was very happy. She laughed all the time. Not until later did she start having these problems and got hooked on drugs.
Sonia doesn't believe Mike Dubois is a killer either, but she understands why I got carried away. Like the people of Jennings, I'm desperate for answers.
This is a small town. Nobody wants to think that there's a killer running around out there. People in this town used to never lock their doors. It's crazy. We don't let our kids play in the streets anymore. It's always in the back of your mind. You know, is something gonna happen today? Are they gonna find a body today? Is this over with? Is he gone? Is he caught? You go to church, you look around and you say, you know, that could be the person that did this.
Do you think there's any corruption or cover-up in this case?
You know, I used to think that way. I did. When it first happened, because of all the rumors that were going around and everything that was said, I did. I thought, oh my God, it's someone in law enforcement. Until I had this detective assigned to this case. I speak to my detective every day, and I call him my detective. He's the one that was assigned to Whitney's case. Every day, we have become friends, and I trust him. I trust him.
So what would you like to say to anyone out there who make that claim that the police aren't doing anything to solve this case?
I would say that they need to become more involved and look at it and talk to the detectives and talk and not just talk to the media and say and hear what the media is saying and the people in town. Go see, go hear, go listen to what the detective has to say.
Sonia believes it's time the community stopped fighting itself and started giving police the support they need to catch this killer.
If you know anything, I don't care how little you think it is, please go to the cops. All of these girls, they all need to be laid to rest. All of these families need closure. And it's just horrible. We've had so much go on that it boggles my mind to think of what has happened in the past few years. It's our families were so close. We were together every Sunday at Whitney and them's house, eating dinner. A bunch of us. Always. The thing I remember most, I'm sorry, is her big smile. She was always smiling. I'm sorry.
Sonia, who did this?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew who did this. I don't know. I think when this killer's caught, I think a lot of people will be surprised. I think everybody's gonna say, oh wow, we didn't suspect that at all.
Right now, the multi-agency task force is still working on these murders round the clock. There is an $85,000 reward posted for information leading to the killer's capture. But the town of Jennings is still nervous, waiting for an arrest. Any information you have, no matter how small, could help crack this case.